Hi, and thanks for listening to The Boatman by Sarah Beth Hunt. This is chapter 2, and I'm recording a chapter each day to celebrate Audio Month. So I'm so glad you are listening, and if you have not listened to the prologue and chapter 1, you can find that on my Facebook page, Sarah Beth Hunt Writer, or look through my Twitter feed at Sarah B. Hunt. The Boatman, Chapter 2. The boatman's face was like a map of ancient lands, full of faded lines, illustrated dragons, shimmering oases, a meeting of the promise of treasure and assurance of deepest peril. While his calm, almost lazy gaze spoke of wide expanses, windswept grasslands, and hot sunsets, the fierce sea air had sanded away any discernible marker of age, so that those most interested in the boatmen, namely the island traders and hordes of school children who roamed the island after the predictable rains each afternoon, were never certain whether he had passed through the storms of 4 decades or 8. There were certainly enough contradictions in his complexion to facilitate heated argument on the subject, for his eyes were so clear and blue, someone would say, but they were held up by a spider's web of creases, and his thick hair, which grew wild like jungle undergrowth, was flecked with more gray than red. And yet something in his smile, half hidden in the vine-swept treachery of his beard, also seemed to grow younger and more carefree with every passing day the islanders watched him. Let alone his age, no one on the island could even agree whether the boatman was a rich, eccentric adventurer, in which case he should be embraced and quickly coaxed into the bosom of island life so that the traders and single women could have their way with him, or whether he was in fact a homeless vagabond, in which case most agreed he should be encouraged to push back to sea as soon as possible. His boat, the island's most experienced fisherman assured, was finely crafted, carefully painted with the 3 red bars, which was a symbol of the mainland, and skillfully sealed against the battery of salt air and sea water. But the mothers and grandmothers were quick to point out among themselves his cracked, dirty fingernails and his suspicious lack of any baggage. Without a firm consensus on the degree of shadiness in his character, the boatman was put up in the Palmlosa mansion, the sprawling home of the last remaining member of the Pernai family, a family which had made its fortune during the great Losa boom in the last century, but had declined in both glory and lineage since the death of the family patriarch, Menal Pernai. Sylvia Pernai, the last of that great house, had found herself at the end of her life, a woman with no husband and no children, but with an ingrained and unshakable sense of style and propriety that marked her status. With the last vestiges of her family home crumbling around her like a carcass picked clean by the wild things of the world and left to shift slowly into the sand, Sylvia put on every piece of antique jewelry still remaining in her family and greeted this strange visitor to the island with a soft, drawling voice she imagined to be the height of island sophistication. When the boatman walked up the 3 whitewashed steps of the Palmlosa mansion and was welcomed into the fading grand house by the trembling of a bejeweled, bony hand with skin like the finest paper, he tried to smile approvingly. Out of a strong sense of both politeness and wonder, he ignored the veil of dust that covered every square inch of the furniture and shifted quietly with each footstep, making the exact moment of his every step traceable by the tracks he left across the wooden floorboards. He pretended also not to hear the anxious creaking of the staircase, the deep grooves of generations of hurried steps hidden underneath a carpet of bright red flowers and green parakeets. He did not allow the shout of dismay to escape his lips when the water pipe shuddered and the tap spat out a bit of mud and 2 dead flies, but would not release any water. "Where can I find a good meal?" the boatman asked Sylvia Pernai on his way out an hour later. And the old woman raised 1 pale hand with effort due to the sheer weight of the jewelry and said, Darling, there is only Dares. When the boatman found Dares, the clouds were already moving in, a slow fading of the distant views, and it seemed to him that the island was drawing into itself like a great secret, sinking into some reflection that made everyone suddenly aware of the tension in their chests. The air outside was green and cool and silent, so different from this morning's scorching sun and glimmering purple backdrop of the island hills at midday. He stepped gratefully into the warm yellow noise of the cafe and sat down at the corner table and did not wonder where he was going to go next. Time felt different here. There seemed so much of it. He fingered the knot in the rough wooden table and looked over at a group of fishermen who had just sat down across a large table. They spoke loudly, as if still fighting the whipping sea winds, and stretched out distances between their boats, and their voices crashed over each other so the boatmen had to strain to understand what they were saying. Slowly the boatman became aware of a large man looming over him. The boatman looked up and met the stranger's eye. "What would you like?" The man's thick mustache moved confidently on his broad face. "What are they drinking?" The boatman pointed to the glass bowls of steaming purple liquid that the fishermen cradled close to their faces so delicately as they yelled at each other across the table. "Losa." "I'll have that," the boatman nodded, but the large man did not leave. "You're new." His voice was soft and deep, like the echo of slow giant waves booming against the rocks. "Just arrived this morning." "Hmm." The man nodded, but he did not ask where the boatman was from. After a while, he shrugged and then smiled in a way that told the boatman he did not assume the boatman was one of the mainlanders. "I'm Dari. If you want some food, just let me know." Later, long after the fishermen had gone, the rain fell, shrouding the hills in a mist of white silence. A great sigh emanated from the old men who sat with frail dark hands playing cards at the corner of the cafe, and then from the older woman who sat gazing out of the wide paneless window, drinking steaming tea with her grandson balanced in her lap, and then even from the group of teenagers who laughed erratically and filled the air with whispers of their adolescent woes. And the boatman joined them, releasing the breath of air he had unknowingly held clenched inside his chest since early that morning, or perhaps much longer, letting the cool, damp mist wash over his face. For that moment, he forgot about the rough seas, the scorching, singeing tendrils of the sun, the hours he had spent on so many days tossing, rowing, straining naked between the open sea and the empty sky. In a state of grateful amnesia, the boatman leaned back into the warm room of the cafe, fragranced with its strange-smelling tea and smoky fire, and listened to the voices of these strangers that sounded like wind blowing through dense forest trees. Everything around him felt new, and he was grateful for the escape. The cascade of tiny purple flowers that covered the island in carefully tended rows now seemed to rise up and hover like wisps of cloud, and their strange, thick fragrance hung in the damp air like a muse, inspiring the imagination. He let his gaze wander down the dusty street, past the shops, the tailor's stall, the fish market, until it curved around behind the purple hills, and he decided that later, after the sun returned, he would follow that road and see where it led. For now, the boatman was happy to sit amongst the blue afternoon breezes that lingered on his eyelids like a good omen. The place was so new, seemed so untouched, and so to him, it seemed perfect.